situation, you know, even though it wasn't open to
study. But if we could, because I have to be at school at 1 o'clock for a program they have in the Native Children's School. I have a, I don't know if that person came. Did you see anybody else out there?
No,
they didn't show up. They were supposed to come here at 11:30, so they didn't show up, so maybe I'm okay on that. But we can keep it around 30 minutes.
Oh,
right. I hope I can be right to the point with your questions, too.
I have the questions already formed. And basically, it's about what I mentioned in the memo, the letter to you about the CAD chair.
I recall.
And
that's
so forth.
Yes, sir.
And first, I'd like to, you know, provide some background. And the first question is, when you assumed the leadership of what was then called the Nation of Islam, you were saddled with had debt, tax problems, and unprofitable businesses, but it had a public image of being very solvent. And you immediately tackled these problems. What I need to know is, why was this necessary so early on to deal with these types of problems?
Well, mainly it was due to the fact that we didn't expect huge sums of monies to be coming in anymore with the new leadership and softer policies regarding obligations of the members of the community, you know.
Yes, sir.
So the huge sums that were coming in from organized Muhammad Speak sales and from organized national fish programs and quotas for newspaper and set amounts for contributions. Even the school, you know, was on the donation slip, and there was a set amount for each temple had to give a definite amount for the school. So all that changed, and we were expecting, depending on people, to just support us in the spirit of Muslim charity, in the spirit of charity. I knew that we would have to do out a lot of things. And we prepared the staff, the national staff, to live on a much less level of material level, level of comfort. We also had prepared the temples, too, for the same thing, to be ready to support themselves locally, not to expect contributions from a national effort.
So money was going out from Chicago to other places?
Yes, money would come, first of all, money would come into Chicago from all places, big and large, big and small, I mean, big and small, and from the main centers, regions, pardon me, good sums were coming in. When I say good amount, Los Angeles, monthly Los Angeles could bring in $70,000.
Yeah.
And New York was bringing in a good, similar amount. Midwest was producing a similar amount. Other areas were bringing less, but a considerable amount of money was coming in monthly.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Now, during the probate case, before the closing of the case, you know, it was mentioned that through that account, that national, what I call the national fund, that was at First Pacific Bank under the title of Elijah Muhammad's Poor.
Yes.
During that time, they calculated that about 80,000, pardon me, not 80,000. It was $12 million or more came in during a certain period of time. You know,
yes,
yes, millions, right? So, I'm not aware of how that money came in, unless it came in for special drives and monies from fish program and others, you know. But they didn't give any explanation where that money came from. So that leave me to wonder, you know, that perhaps some money was coming from some other sources that we are not even aware of.
You don't mean illegal sources?
No, I'm not saying illegal sources,
yes.
But that's possible too. that activity was going on, and we weren't aware of it. It was most likely the Army Elijah Muhammad perhaps weren't aware of it. And maybe it was coming in as charity, just gifts from individuals, and they didn't want their names to be given, you know.
Yes, a lot of people do.
Yeah, yeah, they do. That's right. So it's possible that happened, because I couldn't, with my knowledge of the contributions and how they came in during that time, although I wasn't the National Secretary on top of things like that,
yes.
But from my experience and what I would expect that would be coming in, that seemed like a bit over what would be expected to come in through just regular charities and fundraising.
So I think they counted with about 44,000 slips and receipts or something.
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so. And I was told that some races even sent contributions to the Nation of Islam because it represented the separation of the races.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. That's what I told. So I'm sure that name wouldn't be in the record either.
That's quite interesting.
That's right.
Was there much opposition to your effort to assess the realistic financial picture of the community when you came in?
Yes. The financial picture that I received from Raymond Sharif, John Ali, National Secretary at that time, he was just going out of the picture at that time. When I was released from prison, he was still there. Abbas Rasul, Elijah Muhammad Jr., Elijah Muhammad II, Elijah Muhammad Jr., was that the nation was broke. That's their exact words to me. The nation is broke. And I was told that that the nation had overextended itself.
Yes.
Buying farmlands and other things, that it had overextended itself. And really, money was being used up as fast as it could come in. And money was coming in what I consider to be substantial
yes.
amounts.
I know the image that we had was that things were solid.
No, I was told just the opposite, that the nation was broke, that's what I was told. And that they were happy to see me back out and hope that I would be able to use my influence to get the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to see that things are critical. But when I met him and heard his conversation, it was his conversation was different.
Why do you think they would try to paint that picture then?
I believe they were fearing that that too much was being invested in
yeah.
in non-income properties
oh, I see.
And non-income holding, like the farm. You know, it never was an income piece of property. The farms, the thousands of acres of farms.
Were they intended for the purpose?
They were intended to to serve the community. To serve the community, I wouldn't say, but to be a profit making. Concerns, but they were intended to at least not be a financial burden on the community. It was intended
yes.
to be a help to the community
yes.
by giving food, by bringing food to the Muslim centers for sale and
yes.
and employment for Muslims. You know,
so it never really meant that.
Didn't realize it. It was never realized. So my picture of the financial situation of the Nation of Islam was very. It was a bleak one.
Yes.
It was not encouraging at all.
But did that pose, was it frightening to you?
Yes, in a way. No. Really, the only thing frightened me was the threat to the spirit of faith in the membership
yes.
and the morals. That's the only thing that bothered me. Because I was converted to faith and morality. And I believe that as long as those two survive,
yes.
then things could we could manage whatever else would happen.
It seemed like that assessment proved correct up to this time. A few years before you became the leader, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad received an interest-free loan from Libya.
Yes.
How much was that?
I understood it to be $3 million.
And that was in 1971?
I believe so.
71.
I believe so.
When you assumed the leadership, had that been paid off?
No, it hadn't. me break a minute just to, important business and then, you know, if you can send them somewhere else, send them somewhere else.
You're talking about the loan.
Yes. It wasn't paid off. Yeah. No, it was not paid off. I forget how much was still due, but I think maybe about two-thirds of it was paid. That's my recollection right now. Yeah. So we owed more than $1 million. That's my recollection.
Yes.
And those payments, I believe, were $200,000 twice a year.
And
yes, especially for my administration.
Yes.
Because we weren't receiving hardly. In fact, the tide of contributions started to subside right after I became leader, and about a year after I was a leader, maybe 6 months to a year after I became leader. The national contributions went down to about $140,000, $140,000 coming from everywhere in 1 year.
That's a drastic drop.
You know what the attorneys told me? The attorneys that was working for us on tax matters and other things and vendors and paying off debt, they told me, say, look, say, I know you're different with your father. So this ain't gonna work. Say, you've got to get these people to get some money in here.
But then they know you better than that.
Well, so they all had to leave because we couldn't keep paying them.
Yeah. But you, did we eventually pay that, or you got it?
Yeah, we managed to pay off our debt, tax obligations. The creditors paid them off. We managed to pay all of them off. The attorneys were able to go in court and get the obligation reduced considerably.
Yes.
Yes. For many of the debt, for many of our creditors, and also. We were able to pay back much of the National Bank, the nation's bank,
yes.
Where Muslims were saved.
Guarantee?
Yeah, the savings of the Muslims, before we even went to Guarantee.
Yes.
You know, immediately when I came into office, we transferred it to Guarantee Bank. But we still had the
there were accounts other places?
Yes. No. It was all done by the national office.
Oh, I see.
Right. But when I came in, we transferred them to the bank, to Guarantee Bank. But we had the a record of the investors in that national bank. So we began paying them off with whatever money we had available. And we were able to give most of them that money back. A few of them waited till many several years, four, five, six, 7 years after the announcement was published.
Yes.
They waited that long to ask for their monies. And we didn't have it anymore, you know. But still, we told them that we accepted the obligation, and we tried hard to try to meet that obligation. But I know many of them who came in at the during the last years of my 10-year leadership, they weren't able to get their money.
How was the Libyan loan situation resolved?
I felt that this is a Muslim country.
Yes.
And not a very poor Muslim country.
Right.
So I thought if I went there and explained to them that we were having serious financial problems with the new leadership policy change,
yes,
I thought that they perhaps would consider excusing us from the debt, because in our religion, in the Quran,
yes,
says that it is better to excuse the one who's burdened, taxed with the debt.
Yes.
But if you can't excuse him, you're at least supposed to be considerate, you know. But if it's given in charity to relieve that person, that burdened person, then that's even better.
Yes, sir.
And I expected them to be Muslims of that type, and they were.
They were.
Yes. I presented our situation to them, and didn't take them nothing but a few minutes to consider it. The one who spoke to me, he went back in the office and he came back out. He said, don't worry about it. He said, pay it whenever you can get it. That's it. Don't worry about it.
Not many people know that you did that.
No, they don't. That's right. And we returned with a great burden off us. That was $200,000 that was expected right then,
yeah,
that we didn't have to give them.
So now that debt is just forgiven?
Just forgotten. They've excused us from that obligation.
That's a blessing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is a great blessing. You know, people look at Libya and they only see what's coming out in this political kind of confusion,
yes,
and difficulty for our nation and the Libyan nation.
Yes,
but they don't know that Libya gives a lot of charity.
Yeah, I've seen
a lot of charity.
Listed to the billions.
Yes, to a lot of charity to poor communities of the world, of Africa, and other places too. And also, it's not known that they print a lot of genuine, very genuine, wholesome religious literature.
And just distributed?
Yeah. It's a socialist program there, but it's a God-fearing nation, and they support charity to religious, Islamic religious organizations, and dissemination of pure and excellent religious materials,
yes,
to different parts of the world by the Islamic Call Society.
Yes.
Some of their literature has come to us free, excellent religious material, very clean,
yes,
very genuine, true to the Quran, the Quranic spirit, and to the Sunnah of the Prophet. And I would say I would say it could be called moderate religious material. Because,
yeah,
you know, you can take things out of context, and you can even take the best Quranic material and you take it out of context, and it can be a troublemaking material.
Right.
But I don't see any troublemaking material coming out of the Islamic Call Society. It's the best selection. It's because it shows that those people that are there, they are very educated and very good Muslims, and they are very keen to know what is best for the current,
yes,
situations in different parts of the world.
So the Call Society cannot be separated from the overall Libyan context?
No, it can't. It can't, because the Libyan government supports it. It's based in Libya, and the Libyan government supports it. In fact, there's no separation of religion and state over there.
Yeah. It's the way it should be.
Certainly. Yeah. For Muslims, it has to be that way. For a Muslim nation, it has to be that way.
So all of this seemed to be obfuscated by the political...
Yes, that's right. The Palestinians, in my opinion, I've met many of the Palestinians, and I've known them for some time. In fact, my first Arabic teacher was a Palestinian old man named Ibrahim. And they are some of the most compassionate people I've met.
Yes,
they're warm, compassionate people.
Yes, sir.
But what's going on now, you know, you would think that they were violent and vicious people.
Yes.
With what we're hearing, that some of the fighters, the Palestinian fighters, liberation fighters are doing, you know. So it's very important for Muslims, at least, that we understand that the extreme difficulty in the life of people, especially when they feel it's not just, that is terribly unjust, can create a situation where the image projected in that land, or in that people, can kill the true image of the whole people and the whole nation. And I think that's what's happening in Palestine. That's what's happening in Libya.
Yes. So are they connected, the Palestinian and the Libyan?
They're connected in this new image that has become a burden on Muslim nations, the charge of terrorism and,
Do you think that's deliberate, to paint the Muslim nation as terrorists?
I know some of it is deliberate, because all the avowed crusaders are not dead, and they still would like to see Islam off the planet Earth, you know, or at least checked and under control of the Western powers.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's one scholar who's been in Europe the last few weeks try to encourage them to launch what he called a new crusade.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So it's that spirit continues, because there's always some radicals among the Christians who just love to drink wine and get in the spirit of violence, you know.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm sure we have some among Muslims too.
Yes.
But I think we have a fewer number.
Over the years, you have been, thousands of dollars have been donated to you personally.
Yeah.
But you turn around and you give it to the schools and stuff. Why do you do that?
Yes, when I first became leader, because the Muslim, the community had been kind of, they had been conditioned.
Yes.
To donate great sums. They continued it for me.
Yes.
So I would in turn give it to the schools, because education needed it. Our schools always needed a lot of help that it didn't get. That we didn't get.
Yes.
So I saw a way that we could help the schools without taxing so much the believers, local believers, who had their children in the school.
Yes, sir.
So monies were coming in, and at one time I remember some of the money came in, and I was able to take care of certain needs in the masjid here, for the masjid and the masjid properties around here, and still had enough from that amount that I received in my name.
Yes.
To give this school $25,000 to bring up the science department in the lab.
How many people would have did that when they had all that money to them?
Well, I think
for their own personal use.
I think I don't know how many people from a certain society.
Difficult.
Yeah.
For many people to do that.
But from the right societies, that's what is expected from a person who sits in the position of trust, who has a position of trust.
Yes.
For the community. I considered myself in a position of trust, and whatever people gave me, I was only to use no more than was enough to give me a modest living.
Under your leadership, thousands of dollars of scholarships have also been awarded to you.
Yes, we've awarded scholarships, we've given scholarships, we've helped people get through law school, we've helped...
You have?
Yes, we helped a couple get through law school, we've helped sisters and brothers get their degree.
I know there seems to be a proliferation of degrees since you assumed leadership.
I believe so. The community under Honorable Elijah Muhammad was turned on to education, and many of them who I don't believe would have had the courage to go to college and complete a degree, and especially a doctorate degree,
yes,
were able to do that. Not many, but several,
yes,
people were able to do that under Honorable Elijah Muhammad's leadership. It was because of his great emphasis on knowledge, you know. And when I came into the leadership, I began to address the role of language in developing the human intellect and society, and pointing to the mind, you know, and the picture,
yes,
I had where I was pointing to the mind of man. And I think that, in fact, I know it did, because I got many letters came to me saying that, because of you, I've gotten a renewed interest in education. I've gone back to school, and several of them, as a matter of fact, many of them have written me and told me that they completed their school in their years, and some of them got their master's degrees and doctorate degrees, and received many letters from those who got their Bachelor of Science degree, Bachelor of Arts degree.
Did any of them promise to
And it's helping. It's continuing now.
Well,
I still get there. I just received a couple letters last week. Invitation to come to the graduation, college graduation, one who decided to go back to school.
It would be wonderful if they would help somebody else along the way, too.
I hope they will. That's what they should do. Yes, they should in turn help somebody. No, not all these is right now. They didn't receive financial help now.
Oh, this is the inspiration.
No, yeah. They said, now I'm speaking now of the inspiration that they received, right, not financial help. But we did give considerable financial help to those who, in my opinion, after consulting with others too,
yes,
qualified for that help, for that financial help.
Yes, sir. Did you want her to answer?
No, can you just open the door for us?
And the inspiration you know, the combination there was a great benefit.
Yes, that's right. You know, most of our charities, most of the money that we receive, and that's charity.
So charity is defined as more than just money.
Yes, right. We have people who volunteer, they work in the school, and they don't charge for that work. We have people that have been doing it all along. They come here to help us keep the property up, and they don't charge. We can use more of that volunteer help, but they cut down expenses quite a bit because they're volunteer. That's a cap. That's charity. Any assistance we get from people for the operations we have and for propagation, et cetera, that where they don't require money in return for it, is charity. And when they work for underpaid, it's charity.
That's charity.
Yes, and most of our staff works for underpaid.
But does that negate them from having to pay money also?
Yes, we don't pressure them to pay money because they're giving us. Right, those who are doing that are giving us.
But if they gave the money, would that be considered charity too?
Yes, certainly. Yes. Most of our charity comes from the charitable believers who donate.
Yes. So how significant is charity as a cat in the Muslim life?
It's very significant, extremely significant.
I noticed it's number three.
Yes, it's very significant for our community. If we were living in a Muslim nation that was self-supporting, I'm sure our members wouldn't have to pay tuition to have their children enrolled in our school. They wouldn't have to pay for the just the common kind of basic services that we offer. They wouldn't have to pay for that.
So most Muslim countries are free, isn't it?
Certainly. Education is free. Not only that, if a poor person is found to not have decent food, they'll find, just like here, you have food programs for the hungry. Well, they would give them food. In Saudi Arabia, they give tons of food, to poor people. It's because, it's because not only the riches of Saudi Arabia, but because so much food come there during the hard time, when people sacrifice animals, sheep and cows, and goats.
Yes, sir.
And so they have huge tons of meat, and I think they've found a way now to refrigerate a lot of that meat. So for the weeks or months immediately after Hajj, there's a lot of meat, a lot of food given away to the poor. And I understand that the king over there, he opens up the king facility. The facilities of the king are open up to the poor to come and eat. And I think they eat on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. The poor can come and eat whatever they like, and they serve the same food the king eats.
That happened.
I know that's unique. It might happen somewhere else, but I think it's very unique that the king has done that. And it's the late king.
Yeah.
He has.
King Carlos.
Yeah. He has a time where any poor person can come right and eat the same food that the royalty eat.
Yes.
And in the same kind of situation, the same facility.
It amazed me when I was living to see Colonel Gaddafi get way out there and all those people without fear play anything. And just sitting down and eat what I'm
Yeah, for us, we say, hey, that man is. But he must have enough care about his life at all. See?
Then he never committed us the same way.
Yeah, but obviously something is going. Something is happening in the Islamic society of Libya and Iran that the West is not aware of. And it's the gratitude of those people. Castro, many
never
thought...
Never heard it said like that before.
Yes, Castro. Many thought Castro would have been dead a long time ago. They would have thought that if not an outside assassin, inside assassin,
yes,
would have been taking him away.
Sure.
But he loved his people. He suffered with his people. He shared the burden and suffering of his people. He was his people.
Yes.
He was his suffering people, and they will do anything to keep him alive. You see.
Yeah, I saw some articles in the Tribune last week, and it had that same assessment, that they have a genuine love for him.
Certainly, certainly. They see him as themselves. In fact, Gaddafi is. He's the poor. He was one of the poor and one of the suffering people. Although his situation was, he was in the office, he was in the army, and a colonel in the army and everything. But his family life and his experience has put great suffering in his life.
Why is it that certain leaders can assume this type of aura and others can't?
It's because they have lived with their people and they have become one in the suffering spirit of their people. Right.
And it seems like those are the ones that Western powers especially try to kill or overthrow.
Yes, because they're dangerous. They're dangerous if they're dangerous to Western interests.
Economic interests?
To Western foreign interests.
Foreign interests.
Western foreign interests. They're dangerous to Western foreign interests because of the ideological contrast.
Yes.
The ideology of Libya contrasts with the fundamental ideology of capitalist, of free enterprise in the capitalist society. Not so much free enterprise, but capitalism per se.
Yes.
It contrasts with it so sharply that in terms of ideology, I think a conservative, patriotic American would think that that's as much as dangerous, or maybe more dangerous, that's coming out of Libya, that's in Libya, than what they have in Russia, you know, in Moscow. And it's simply because in Russia there's no God, but in Libya there's a God, there's Allah, there's belief in the same God. You see, that the world believes in one God. So when you have that kind of combination, a very strong socialist program, and then sanctioning that program is God, the belief that God smiles upon it, then that's something very strong.
I saw a statement this morning. Major Jalloud is in the Soviet Union, and he was saying that, the papers were saying that, the Russians don't want to sign a friendship pact with Libya because they can't trust Colonel Gaddafi, because one time he got up in a speech and told them they should get out of Afghanistan, you know, and stop oppressing people around the world.
Well, as long as Colonel Gaddafi is representing also, he's a Muslim.
Yeah.
And he represents the Muslims of Libya. And in fact, he represents the, as he has established himself, the oppressed Muslims of the world.
But as long as he come across like that, though, in the West.
I know it doesn't, but that's his position. That's his stated position. So as long as he takes that position for Islam, then I think we're going to have that kind of difficulty with the West. Because, as I said, you have a combination now. You got a material program, and a religious, powerful religious protection over it. You see.
Yes, sir.
So if there is not agreement, and workable kind of a relationship for the State Department or for foreign relations department and Libya, I'm sure that it's going to always be that great difficulty for any kind of peaceful relationship.
You know, the week before the attack on Libya, President Reagan, in his public, last public statement on television, accused him of wanting to unite the entire Muslim world.
Well, I
just
think...
just before he made the mad dog statement.
Yes. I don't think he has that kind of aspiration, to be true with you. From what I've learned of him and heard of him, I don't think he has that kind of aspiration. But if the opportunity would present itself, I believe he would be happy to move right into it.
Yes, sir.
But I don't think that's his aspiration. I think Colonel Gaddafi is a man that realizes he's a small nation, but he realizes also that the position that he has taken, he and his nation have taken, is very bold and very extremely courageous. Extraordinary position, you know, and bold and courageous position. And I think he realizes that taking such position really puts him in danger of being undermined by adverse nations, adverse philosophies of nations that adhere to adverse philosophies, adverse policies that have clashed with his nation and his policies, and that he has to survive. And I think that what we see in Colonel Gaddafi and extremists in the Palestinian movement, maybe the whole Palestinian movement, is a desperation for survival.
It appears that way because now it seems like, especially Israel, is even more determined not to grant the Palestinians one inch of anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that only heightens that desperation. And knowing the history of the conflict there in the Middle East, the genuine Palestinians, Arabs, and the Israelis that came in and occupied the land, and knowing America's involvement and the West's involvement, I cannot help but sympathize with the Palestinians and with the Libyans. While I have differences, as you know, with the posture of Colonel Gaddafi, I can't help but admire him. I can't help but admire the man because I'm aware of his history. And I think
So we have to put things in his historical context?
Certainly. If any American, if any sober-minded American, freedom-loving American, could see, well, I say sober-minded and freedom-loving American, could see the whole life of Colonel Gaddafi and what he has been able to achieve in terms of social equality in his country for his people, and how he has helped that in many other places. I think if they could see the whole picture, I'm sure they will still have, they will still perhaps be aggravated, even angered maybe, by some developments in his life.
Yes.
But I'm sure that if they could see the whole life of Colonel Gaddafi, they would have to say that's a man to be admired.
You know, there's two things that they have never accused him of. One is wasting his country's resources and bad morals.
No, he doesn't waste his country's resources. He puts his country's resources to the proper use. And that is to the benefit of the whole people of all the people of his country.
I'm not going to take 5 more minutes of your time. It's 12:30 here.
But I started to say before we got into that charities that come into us.
Yes, sir.
We can locate the points. The point of receipts.
Yes, sir.
And disbursement.
Yes, sir.
That's the bank. Community Bank of Lawndale. We still have about $7,000, better than $7,000 at the First National Bank in Chicago.
Yes.
First Bank of Chicago is called now.
First Bank of Chicago.
You're right. Yeah, yes, downtown. We had our largest amount of charities were at that bank until they were used up for the community. we started out with about $1 million, about $500,000, and with $700,000, and it went on up to about $3 million. At one time, we had about $3 million.
We talking about from the time you came in.
This is under my leadership.
Okay.
We had about that much money downtown.
Yes, sir.
That money was used to relieve the financial difficulties for the whole community, not just Chicago, the whole community. It has helped to buy mosques, to buy places for the Muslims to have worship in.
Yes.
It has helped schools, the national schools around the country. It has helped many individuals. It has paid many, many debts for our community. It has helped to create jobs. We gave the California, we gave about $20,000 to create a job program.
Mm-hmm.
They're selling encyclopedias, African-American encyclopedias. We put out a very good encyclopedia. I can't recall the name.
Is that the one that cost about $100?
Yes, I think so.
We got a call this morning. A lady wants to re-advertise. She said, got overwhelming response from it.
Yes, yes. Well, those, so you know, the paper.
Yeah.
Our paper. You all helped us publish that, helped us advertise that.
Yes.
Yes. Well, it gave jobs to youngsters who needed jobs, and maybe some of them changed their mind about the streets, you know, about what they thought their role should be in the streets.
Yes.
Because of that program. And we've gave assistance to other areas too. To
the non-Muslim areas?
Yes, we gave assistance, certainly. Assistance has gone also to non-Muslim, but a very small amount. Most of it has gone to Muslim. As you know, we gave something, a donation, a small token donation of $1,000 to the Afghanistan Freedom Fighters.
Right.
And we also gave to Christian charitable organizations. We give almost regularly to charitable organizations. We reserve a certain small percentage of our funds for non-Muslims that we know are honorable and have the same essential principles and goals, the moral goals, and the strong belief in God that we have. So we, though they're not Muslims, we have to support them. And we don't have much, but we share. We have to share with them. So we do that. Here in Chicago area, we have helped the school about a third of the money to operate our school has come from charity until very recently. It ran out. You know, now, as I say, we only have $7,000 downtown, $7,000 there. But up until it ran out, we were regularly given like $5,000, $10,000. To the school, so we can meet payroll and pay our taxes. You see, payroll taxes.
Very few people even know that. Even Muslim people.
Well, no, they don't know. But I say that what I do is open. Anybody, have some concern, they can come and look at the. I can give the bank. I tell the bank, give them a copy of the whole record, the whole state.
You said that for 10 years.
Yeah, yes. We don't blow a horn. We don't toot any horn because we feel that this is our obligation. No more than our obligation. But I invite any believers who would like to know, and I hope that maybe the accounting department, the accounting among us, we have an accounting here for the Hazem Ali.
Yes.
He's on the board, Mars board here,
right.
Which is something very much appreciated by all of us. He's a very highly qualified accountant. I would invite him or anybody that the community would want to get the records of what has been done with the contribution and make it available to the whole community.
I mean, it's so rare that the organizations do this. That is rare.
Yeah. Well, we would like to do that. I think we should publish what we do in a publication, but we have a newsletter. I think it would be perhaps too much for our small newsletter.
Yeah.
But we should publish it periodically, maybe quarterly.
Yes.
There should be a quarterly report on what's being done with the charities.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. But we're so busy, you know, we're so busy trying to just keep up with things that's going on. I don't have the time myself to do that, but someone in the community, if they would do that, we'd appreciate it.
Are people paying the tuition now, are you sure?
No, we can never expect, we can never expect hardly more than a third of the tuition tuition to be paid by the parents or by the community.
A third of the people, or
yeah,
a third of the
cost? No, a third of